Andy, how's it going?
Going well. Like I was saying before we started talking, started recording, closed on the house, just happened to not live there yet. So halfway there, I feel like. We'll see. I mean, in this market, we're at least happy to have that first step done, and we'll be in there soon enough. And that gives us more time to buy a bunch of stuff to fill it up. So exciting.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I know you didn't go as crazy as a lot of people did with like paying over asking price and all these crazy things. I mean, not to get into specifics, but it sounds like it was a fairly reasonable deal. So that's good. Yeah. I know a lot of people got caught up in.
Yeah. I mean, it was fairly reasonable with like an asterisk near, like in this market, I think it still was over asking, but nowhere near as nuts as some of the houses we looked at. I mean, I think it was because, it was just the sellers were upfront that they wanted to close quick, but stay in the house for a few months afterwards. And a lot of people didn't have that flexibility. So in the end, it worked out. We don't see ourselves really ever moving again after this one. So get it out of the way, and long run, going a couple months without moving in won't be that big of a deal. But yeah, and then on SaberSim, it's starting to make the shift towards getting ready for football, which is exciting. It's trying to plan is difficult. So really like what we've done is just say, okay, lock in the team that we have now, make sure we're capitalized to maintain our team. If revenue stays where it is, make sure we're good there. Obviously planning for significant growth, but it's just super hard to forecast that. And I think the biggest thing going forward is going to be planning a bit more around the valleys in revenue rather than the peaks. I've talked about this in other episodes where it's just like, for me, part of me is very ambitious, wants to grow as quickly as possible. But the other part of me just doesn't deal with the stress of that well. And so I think what we're trying to build is we wanted to get to where we are now as quickly as we could. It made sense to burn along the way to get there and to keep this team in place. We're okay burning for a bit, but we want to get a profitability and then from there build something that's more of a steady compounder rather than a rocket ship. And I mean, I still do want 50%+ growth a year, and I still do want to grow quickly, but it's just not as high of a pace as before. And so, it's just figuring all that out. And I think planning around the valleys over the peaks will help. And we just got to wait and see what things look like over the next few months. So a lot been going on, but that's kind of where we're at. How are things on your end?
Yeah, man, they're good. I think we talked about it last week or the week before, just like with summer and the kids being around, we're about halfway through summer here. Been taking more time during the day to do stuff with the kids. And so I work in the mornings a lot, work in the evenings a lot. And it's been a really nice mix. You know, I'm probably only working about 6 hours a day right now, but like they're really good 6 hours. And so I feel really good about that. Been going to co-working places and coffee shops just to get out of the house and really power through, you know, a few hours in the morning or the afternoon of work. And like, I don't feel guilty. Even if I'm lying to myself, I don't feel guilty. So like it's been really nice. I went and played laser tag with the kids today just after lunch, like really, really fun stuff. So yeah, I feel really good about that balance, you know, to where I can see putting in another 5 years of this. Whereas a month ago, I would have said, this has to end like one way or another, this has to end soon. So I mean, it feels really good.
You were concerned too about a potential another lockdown. It seems like it's almost going the other direction right now. How is France looking with all of that?
Oh, terrible. Yeah. Nah, I shouldn't say terrible. Terrible in the number of cases, but the ICU load is low. So I think they'll let it run as long as the ICU beds are available, which I think makes sense. So they're talking about this, the fourth wave already with the Delta variant. But yeah, I mean, the problem is just not enough people here are vaccinated. But I think the U.S. is seeing the same thing in certain places, Florida.
Yeah, for sure. And it's very, I'm sure it's going to be similar in France, whereas some areas are much less vaccinated than others. And like here in Maine, the state is doing very well. Portland is probably like 80%+ vaccinated, whereas I think if you went to some more rural areas, it would be flipped. And so it's all just depends on where you are. And I think, it's figuring out, all right, what can the hospitals handle? What can we do to encourage more vaccinations? But just making sure that things are as under control as possible. Sane, at least. Hopefully we can get out of this at some point. But no, glad to hear that you're kind of still able to enjoy the summer and find that better balance. For you, do you see it as this is going to be summers are the time where you recharge a bit? Or are you really looking for something that just throughout the year, you're able to have a more consistent balance between work and family and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, it's really like the summer. The kids are off school. They're home. We're not traveling a lot this summer just because stuff is weird. So yeah, it's really just the kids are home and I want to do stuff with them. You know, they're 9 and 10. Like, this is really like a really cool summer because they like, you know, when you have kids, you'll see like when they're 2, they can't do anything. And they're just like, you just carry them around, right? But then like 8, 9, 10, they're cool. My daughter just got a phone. So like all this really cool stuff to do with the kids. And I just don't want to, like, I don't want to waste it. Because like when they're in school, I have from 8 to 4 to just work the whole time. And that's awesome from that, from a work perspective. And now it's like, I want to spend some time with them. So yeah, it's cool. It's cool. But you know, the thing that we were chatting about just before we hopped on the call, and actually, I think you and I couldn't be more different in this. So it'll be an interesting discussion, is like this concept of like deep versus wide. And I think it applies, you can have it apply to like every aspect of life, but certainly of the business, right? It's like, do you do a bunch of things, and does your app have a bunch of features and serve a bunch of different types of people, or is it like the best at one specific thing? And I come from a very much like wide perspective of just like, hey, we should do everything. And, you know, we should do every marketing campaign and modality, and we should do every type of feature and add on and all this kind of stuff. And like, I think you come from the like, we're going to do this thing really super well and execute on it and stick with it for a long time. And so maybe we thought we could chat through like pitfalls we've seen of the innate tendencies that we both probably have, both I think like in product and in marketing, because those are the two applications of this that I see the most.
On the product side, for us, we've definitely gone deep, and recently actually made some decisions to, I don't know if go deeper is the right way of phrasing it, but like to stay focused on what we're doing and what makes us different. There are some features that have been requested for ever since I joined years ago. And we were planning on adding some of them. And some will get added, but we made the conscious decision to draw a line in the sand and say, some of these things we're just not going to do, because a lot of the feature requests are just come from a very legacy mindset based on how the tools in the space were originally built. With the way those tools were built, like, yes, you needed a lot more control over the process. You effectively had to program in everything you wanted the tools to do, because they were built as basically glorified spreadsheets with a lot of functionality in this, but like you had to tell it exactly what to do. We've built SaberSim to be different and understand a lot of the nuance that goes into building lineups for daily fantasy sports, so that you just simply don't need to program it as much. There is work that has to be done, but it's not the same kind of work you would do in the traditional tools. And Matt and I were going really deep into speccing out one of those more advanced kind of control-oriented features, and it was getting super complicated. And at the end of the day, just we took a stop. We actually like stopped and said, this doesn't make sense, because the way the feature was built or was designed was to effectively jury-rig something that we do out of the box. And when we were getting more requests for it is when our models weren't necessarily as strong, and we didn't have some other complementary features that could get you closer to what people were looking for. So this long-winded way of saying we've doubled down on those things that make us different, because I feel like we're more confident in that core product. And we can say with a straight face, like, you don't need that anymore. Like, that feature, frankly, is a waste of time if you're using a modern tool like SaberSim. Where we're trying to go wider, though, is by getting into sports betting. Like, DFS is a niche of the gambling market, and I think there's still growth there, and we're still going to continue to grow into that space because there's a lot more we can do there. But we're still finding ways to try to go wider with the sports betting side of it. And I think when people talk about niching down, especially with positioning, it's a really great way to stand out in a crowded market, because you're defining your market. And as you get more and more share of that market, it starts making sense to figure out, how do we go wider from here? Or you could just build, like, maybe that niche is big enough where you can just build a really good business and you own that market, and that's it. And that's fine. But yeah, it's not as though we're taking too focused of a view of the product side. But on the marketing side, like, yeah, I'm definitely I go very deep on a couple of things. Yeah.
I want to ask you a question about the new direction on the product, because like we're obviously doing like a similar thing with private podcasting, but like I guess one, I think a fair statement is just that new products and new companies don't do this. And that's very smart, right? Like a new product should do a thing really specifically, really well.
Unless you have a ton of money in the bank and you're able to, because it's just frankly, it's harder to build a wide product because you're going to need more features because you're covering so many use cases. And then it's harder to market and sell. But if you have a big enough team, it's a solvable thing. I mean, look at Notion, look at Trello, look at any other similar tools that have done it, but it's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you get some traction, I think I don't know, maybe if I'm really honest with myself, this is a bit of a cop-out to say like our growth can come from new products instead of doing this other thing that we started with really, really, really well. Like it's not a right or wrong answer. I think maybe it's just like this is a different way to look at it, maybe, is like we can grow by continuing to be very finely focused on our core thing, or we can expand out, I think like we both are, and I think like a lot of companies do, from this one thing to this adjacent thing. But like, as you think about doing that, like before you guys got into like looking at conventional betting, what are the things that scare you or like you really are concerned about as you're making that decision?
So I guess for some context on how I think about it in general, I think it's similar to what we had said around hiring, where it's very, very hard to bring in someone as a new hire to figure out a role that you don't even know how to do. And I think the way we've looked at this is on the DFS side of it, we have a great team in place. We're still figuring out how to work more effectively. We're still working out a lot of those kind of details, but we have a pretty clear roadmap and I'm confident that we can continue executing it. So now I feel like it's okay. It's not an either or thing where we go after one or the other. I think we've got the machine running for the DFS side of it. It's going to need some maintenance. It's going to need some tweaks, but it doesn't take as much of my time, in my opinion, to keep that running, keep that growing. And so now it's like, all right, what is the next bet? And what can I try to spin up to see if we can get some traction and then start investing more into it? So I'm viewing it as I want to keep growing the DFS side of it. We will keep growing that side. It's just more of a solved problem. So the betting side, at the end of the day, it's a lot simpler because people who like DFS over sports betting, it's similar to like people who like poker more than slot machines. There's strategy to DFS. It's not as simple. And you're not really playing against the house. You're playing against other people. So it's still very difficult to win in the long run, but it's much, much, much more achievable than when you're playing against the house, because the house is usually very good and they have vig, they have fees on their side to make it not even a level playing field. So for DFS, it just attracts a different person and it requires a lot more work, but that's why people like it. They want the strategy. They want to put more time into it. So we need to build all these features. We need to keep working on all these different things. With sports betting, people frankly like just want to win. They just want to know who to bet on that's going to win in the long run. And that's still like a very difficult thing to do. There are winning sports bettors. I would classify myself in that group and the rest of our team in that group. And so honestly, a lot of our challenges or concerns were just like, we don't want to compete with ourselves. So in daily fantasy sports, we're not selling the lineups that we build ourselves. We're selling tools to help people build their own lineups. And they're based on our projections. So they might be similar, like they might rhyme with one another, but they're not going to be the same. The contests are very large. And sure, there is going to be some impact of having more players in the space in our contest, but it's not as big of a deal. Whereas in sports betting, there's more of a concern there, like we'd be competing against ourselves. If we're giving out these picks, we do very well betting them ourselves. And so there's just a lot. That's honestly where a lot of my concern comes from, is like, is this going to be cannibalistic to our personal sources of revenue? I'm optimistic that we can find a way to structure it where it's not. There are some types of bets that casual people like, and they're called prop bets, where it's more like, how many strikeouts will this pitcher get? Will this person hit a home run? How many points will they score? Things like that, that frankly, like, people love betting on those types of things. In the books, aren't as great at pricing those things. So there's edge there. However, because they're not as good at pricing it, they don't let you bet that much. And so because you can't bet that much, like, it's not really worth our time personally betting it. So there are things we can do to overcome that. But that's honestly one of the major concerns, is just how do we do this in a way where we're able to sell winning picks and winning in the long run. There's a lot of variance, ups and downs, this and that, without hurting ourselves. But the other side of it is just like, it's a pretty shady industry. Most of the people selling picks aren't winning bettors. They promote in like scammy ways. And it's really like that, we don't want to be put into that bucket. So a lot of it is just figuring out as well, like, how do we do this in a way that we're comfortable with? Like, how do we do this in a way that makes it clear we're not like the others? We're not saying this is like the mortal lock of the century, this is bet always wins, this and that. Like, we're not going to get into that. And that's a challenge too. And those are the main challenges. I mean, we also then have like the marketing challenges of like, how do we actually get people to hear about us on that side of it? And I have ideas for that. And I think we'll see pretty quickly if there's validity to those. But it's more the meta challenges that have been not keeping me up at night, but that I've been thinking about more.
So, I mean, it's interesting that like your biggest concerns are more personal and not as much like, because one thing that I think of is we only have the 100% capacity we have from our team right now, right? And that can be put to, you know, so many kind of units of work. And if we are now splitting this between two products or two marketing initiatives or two teams or whatever, two sales campaigns or whatever, you know, all these things, then the ability realistically to do either one of them really, really, really well is less. And I think for me, the math then ends up being like, well, okay, if we're splitting our focus between two things, and can we do both of them, you know, 75% good to where we're getting more than if we just did one thing and did it, you know, 100% good. And I think that like, that's fuzzy math because you don't know, but that's kind of, it's not thought process, I guess, but that's the consideration I give when I'm looking at like, hey, should we do this other thing? What's it going to take away from other things we can do? Opportunity cost, you know, and then like, how much time will it take on an ongoing basis and effort and focus? And then like, what's a potential upside of us if we are in this market or if we serve this type of customer, or if we have this pricing strategy or whatever? And like, all those are just throwing darts at the wall. You can guesstimate it, but tougher to put like real numbers on that. But that's kind of just like my two cents or thought process for sure towards approaching it.
For us, it's a very different situation from that side of it, because this is more of a selling our sawdust kind of a thing, where the way we create our projections for DFS is we simulate every game play by play thousands of times. In doing that, like, we can project the performance of individual players, but we also see how the actual games played out thousands of different times. It gives us the data for this kind of thing already. We already have people working to continuously improve the models. And then on the software side, that's like one of the major benefits of the betting product, is people aren't looking for, I mean, there are companies that exist that let people make their own models and this and that. And I think, frankly, those are not, I don't think they make sense. I think people like, this is a bit of a danger, but like, people in anything, whether it's stocks, whether it's gambling, anything, people want to feel like they have control over the process. And so people often want to make changes and build charts and do this and do that, even if it actually has no impact. And I think a lot of the betting products that allow people to look at trends and this and that, it's kind of hand wavy and it doesn't really help them get better. And so at the end of the day, people want to place winning bets. We have those bets. We just need to display them to them. We already have like a basic app that's been in the product for a couple of years. So we don't really need to build new software. There's like a couple changes we want to make to improve it a little bit more, but like, that's a few weeks of work, maybe a month of work. The only real additional work is on the marketing side. And I just don't think it's that complicated. And so there will be some trade-offs that Jordan and I have to make on if we're picking up, if we're writing more emails, if we're have another content site. Like, yes, that will take more of a time and there's only so much of that to go around. But that was why we waited until we felt like we had the DFS content production, everything else down pretty good. But yeah, it's more of a no-brainer in the sense of like, all right, we've got the bandwidth, we've got that part figured out, let's place this next bet. Whereas I think on your side, you're feeling a similar wave that we see with sports betting as it's getting more regulated, that we want to be in front of this. We want to have exposure to this growing market. You feel that around private podcasting. So that makes the potential outcome much higher when you can catch that wave at the right time in your position well to do that. But yeah, your downsides are more significant than ours. So part of that, I'm assuming, is why you raise money, is so that you weren't pulling everyone off of the product that's more established for this new thing, but you're still going to have some loss of focus. So I know you talked about like what you're thinking about, but can you get more into the weeds on like how you're actually like how much, not slower, but like how much of the team will be shifted towards this? Is it, are people going to be doing both or will it be more segregated? How are you actually like splitting that up?
I think for sure, like raising money was a big part of being able to do this. I use the term expanded focus, and that's an oxymoron, I think, but like it is like the closest term I can come to what we're trying to do. And to have expanded focus, you just need to have more ability to focus, right? And so more things you can focus on. And that's what raising money and hiring people is hopefully allowing us to do. Yeah, I mean, specifically like sales is a big part of that. And that's kind of obvious. Like it's a whole new part of the company. And it's a thing that I'm working a lot on along with Matt and Sam from our team. That's obvious. And that's just not just money, but that's money, right? To pay the sales folks and getting the process and pipeline set up there. It's a non-trivial thing to set that stuff up. It's also like a fair amount of work up front to get as much of that set up now as we can. The guys start in 3 weeks. And so working a ton to get all that stuff set up. And we've been working for the last 6 weeks to get all that stuff set up. And once it is, like that won't require a ton of my focus longer term. And I guess that's the one like finite resource we have is my focus and, you know, any founders or, you know, leaders focus. And then like from a product side, that's probably where things are being split the most is like the development team is growing a little bit with this, you know, raising money, but also like they're being asked to say like, okay, we basically have two sides of the house now, conventional podcasting, private podcasting, and now like our mobile app, I guess. We have like three parts of the house that we're kind of focusing on. And so like all that really makes us do is be a little more diligent about planning, you know, and like process around what we're doing just because we have more people. And frankly, I think that like we've experienced some growing pains there of like bringing on developers and like just not having an environment where they're set up for success. Like I blame myself for that like we grew too quickly maybe in that respect. And we're catching up on that. Like we brought in an engineering manager and they're helping really tighten up a lot of that process and expectations and communication, all that kind of stuff. So like the development team is definitely coming around and we're shipping stuff faster now. I think you're spot on that like more people does not mean more or better, you know, without all of the other stuff. And I think that was a fallacy that I didn't realize 6 months ago when we hired the new developers.
How deep is the backlog of on the traditional podcast hosting side of the business? Because this is going to be my ignorance showing, but having looked at a bunch of different podcast hosts, the features all seemed relatively similar. There wasn't something that I saw in a different one that it felt like Castos didn't have. And I'm sure there's things you are thinking about doing to differentiate, but I guess in my head, that side of the business is almost similar to probably further along than DFS for us, where it's like, there's still more you want to do, but am I wrong in saying like, there's not like, if you hired 6 developers just to work on traditional podcasting, would it be worthwhile to do that and keep them busy for like a year? Or is there more of like a finite thing of like, we're going to keep improving it, keep fixing bugs, keep adding to it, but there's not as much urgency at this point? Or how does that look to you?
I think so. it's the fact that there's not six developers worth of time just on private podcasting. And so I guess we're kind of in the same boat to you to say, like, the product is pretty well baked. The problem is solved to a fair extent on the conventional podcasting side of things. And so to grow at the rate we want, we kind of need to look at other things. And for us, it could have been like ad-based, you know, growth and monetization, or it could be private podcasting. And we chose the latter. Because I think the other part is like the market's not that big. It's not, you're not MailChimp or, you know, a MailChimp competitor where literally every business is a potential customer. You know, I mean, podcasting is a big and growing market. So I don't think there's a total addressable market problem. Yeah, I guess the math in my head was like, it's easier for us to get to 5 million revenue doing this than to be just the absolute 100% best at like the core product and get, you know, 30% market share or something like that. That seemed really like a big lift. And this doesn't seem like a big lift. And that's just to throw some kind of random numbers around.
Okay. And for, I mean, 30%, if you had 30% of the traditional podcasting market, you'd have much more than 5 million revenue, I would assume, right?
Yeah. I mean, so maybe say 10 or 15%. Yeah. Like, I don't know, like you'd have to look, Libsyn is a publicly traded company. You have to look right at what they're traded over the counter. Anyways, yeah, you could look at that and figure that out and estimate that their market share is, yeah, I mean, their market share is probably 20%, 15%.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like, see that, to be completely honest, like that surprised me to hear you say that, because I think with roughly where you are right now, it's not like you need to 10x to get to 5 million. And so in most cases, I feel like unless people are already getting diminishing returns and growth is really slowing, to get a growth smaller than that, it's doubling down on what you're doing right now. But I think with private podcasting, that's where it could be significantly bigger. But also it's at the same thing. It's not, and this is where I get trapped as well, is thinking about like, it's either or, where it's not as though you can't continue growing the traditional podcasting. It's not as though you couldn't get to 5 million just in the back of that, but now have this other revenue stream that is contributing a significant amount as well.
Yes, that's a very good point. Yeah.
So what I'm curious about is for Sam, who's, what's his actual title again?
Head of growth.
Okay. So how is he thinking about balancing the two prongs of the business? And I guess also then podcast productions is another piece of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sort of time-based right now, you know, with the sales people coming in, basically Sam and I talked and agreed, and I think it's the right thing that like the focus needs to be on everything to support the sales people right now, or like 80-20, you know, like 80% of his efforts need to be on that to make them be successful or help them be successful. And it's a time-based thing because if we put in that work, say this quarter, then after this quarter, they're there and they're successful and there's iterative things that we need to do. But we can then spend like the maybe 20 or 30% of our time on that, you know, driving enterprise leads, driving leads to Castus Productions. And he can kind of pivot his focus back to the organic self-serve sign-up side of the house. But I mean, we're fortunate, and y'all are too probably, that like you have that engine already. You have all your marketing practices that you're doing already, and that's driving the growth of the conventional side of the business for us. But kind of just said like, hey, we have this point in time that is unique where we're bringing two salespeople in. We owe it to them to spend a bunch of time and effort to kind of set them up for success and support them in their first couple months at least, and then can kind of figure out what the balance should be after that. That's kind of where things stand today.
I feel like his role is, you obviously need to have a strong grasp on that balance, but that's really his job, is to figure, because if he's tasked with growth, ultimately it doesn't matter where it comes from, it's figuring out the most effective way of getting it. And so it's not going to be an even split between everything, whether it's resources, whether it's money, whether it's time, whatever it may be, but like it won't be an even split. But yeah, I feel like that's just got to be a constant balance for him, and then talking with you regularly to figure out if it's the right spot. But is that kind of how you're thinking about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we talk a lot about it, but try to give ourselves like the grace of saying we don't need to talk about it all the time. Like, let's say this month at least, you know, this is the direction, and let's go tackle this and spend a bunch of energy on this and kind of then see where we are. And really like between now and when the sales folks start, which is, you know, in 3 weeks, that's the focus, is getting everything ready for them. And then really for some time after that, it's going to continue to be the focus. And then we need to let them go and run with it and do their job. And like in that time, the focus, you know, comes back to the conventional side of things. So like longer term after that, like into next year, then the question is like, how do we start evaluating that balance on like a long-term basis when this big new event of a sales organization starting isn't happening? And I don't know what that'll be, but yeah, I'm sure that that we'll be checking in on that. And it probably is, yeah, just chasing what's working and doing more of it.
I don't mean to just open up a can of worms. We don't need to go too deep into this, but to me, it just begs the question of, we were talking about going wide versus going deep as it relates to product, as it relates to marketing in the business. But what about your leadership style? Just how you are as a CEO? Is it trying to be completely removed from everything equally? Is it and putting the right people in place? And I guess you go deep on management and vision and that kind of thing? Or yes, where do you go deep or versus wide as a CEO? I'm definitely like, and I think for us, a lot of it is by necessity of not having a bigger team, so that like I still do need to get my hands dirty. But at the same time, like I do think even if we grew the team significantly, we had true leaders in each of the major departments, I think I would still want to have a lot of say in the growth strategy. But I don't know, like where do you fall on that spectrum of where to go deep, if you really go deep at all on as a CEO?
So I'll talk about like where we are and then like where I want to go. So like where we are is I do go really deep in, and it sounds so much more grand than it really is, but like deciding the vision, like say the goals and the things that we want to do, and then chatting with the people to help them be successful towards reaching those goals. That is the thing I do and really enjoy, is saying like, hey, we want to build this feature. Okay, let's all organize around building this feature. Or hey, we want to hire these people and build a sales team. Okay, let's do that. And I have some individual contributor things I need to do to make that happen. But like to a large extent, it's like planning and helping the people that are actually executing a lot of this to be working on the right things, from my perspective, at least. Where I think we're going from here is just kind of like further on that spectrum, and to where I could remove myself from some things entirely. And those are probably things that I just don't enjoy, is what I'm planning on. Is like, I like product, but I'm not good at any of the like individual parts of product, but I like being involved in the process. It's probably the thing I like the most. And so I probably will stay involved there. And I like sales and marketing and want to still very much be involved in like deciding what we're going to do. But from there, the goal is just to support the people that are better at this than I am.
And I guess it's similar to what we were saying earlier, where it's, we're both comfortable placing a second bet when we feel like it's not that either or situation. And like, because in that, my opinion, that's a pivot. And what we're doing isn't a pivot. Maybe in 5 years, 3 to 5 years, we are more focused on that new thing. But like right now, it's not a pivot. We're placing a new bet. And I think those are very different. And we're comfortable placing that bet when we have things operating well for where they are, for where they're going. And we're comfortable that the machine can keep running, keep growing without as much babysitting from us. And I think, I guess that's sort of not correct, but that's the view that suits me best for the business. But I also feel like it's got to be what I look at for evolving my own role, where once we get to a spot where we do have people who are more than just competent, but are great in each of those roles as a leadership, when someone's running growth, when someone's running whatever else it may be, that me spending too much time still trying to go deep there isn't a great use of my time. And maybe there are other ways to level up, other ways to grow, or other bets to place. So I think it all kind of comes together in that same way.
I'll just give one other like observation, is that having truly senior people make all of this very different. And in some parts of our organization, we do, to where like, We did like an integration webinar live stream yesterday with like a new integration partner with Descript. Like, I don't know if you know Descript. I was involved in none of it because like we have really amazing, you know, Matt and Sam did the whole thing because they are better at it than I am. And like, that's transformative for me, is to say like, I shouldn't be involved in this because I'll just fuck it up. Whereas there are parts of the business where like, I still need to be involved in like pretty nitty gritty things because we just don't have enough people or the people in the right positions and stuff. Like, and sales is one of them, right? Because we don't have salespeople yet. But like, I think the people that we're hiring could be those super senior people to where like, they're just going to come and tell me in 6 months, hey, we need to triple our price, or we need to not offer this thing anymore, or, you know, we need to get rid of HubSpot and pick up whatever, you know, whatever it is. And I think that's the other like big compounder, is getting those people into where like you just don't even think about it anymore. It seems so far removed, as like bootstrappers are mostly bootstrappers, but like I just am getting a glimpse of it, that like this could happen and there could be, you know, 4, 5, 6 people that just run the company so much better than I could in each of those groups.
Yeah. And whenever we work with someone, whether it's as a consultant or a full-time employee who fits that mold, I just become a firmer and firmer believer in what you're saying. And that's why I never really understood the whole value of the CEO being the chief recruiter and all of that until working at SaberSim and building out a team and getting great people in place. It's like, okay, like I see that now. If we can just get more of those people and fill out the team with those kind of people, that makes all the difference. That's obviously the goal. We're there's still a lot to do to get there. But yeah, we're happy to be sharing the journey with everyone listening. Don't know if we came to any conclusions today, but it was good just talking through a lot of this with you, Craig.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
All right, see you, everybody.